Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another in our ongoing series, The Food Revolution Papers, a chance to look at the politics behind what's on your dinner plate. Joining me, as always, are my very good friends, the writing and research team of Manny Barling and Ashley F. Brooks. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Simon.
I normally like to start the program off with, you know, some absolutely off-the-wall story. Not going to do it today. Instead, I want to make a little announcement. On Monday, I was perusing the internet, as I have a wont to do, and I discovered that your new book has indeed been published. The Food Revolution Papers is available to the general public. You must be pretty excited.
Yes, and relieved. It was a lot of work. It's like giving birth, as you know, Simon.
Oh, indeed. I mean, the publishing industry is not an easy one.
No, I find the practice of law easier than the publishing industry.
Okay. That's really all I had for an intro, but I do know that you folks have some things cooking.
Yeah, Ashley has a couple little stories that are funny but not funny and ironic and all those different things you can do it. But gentlemen, please grab your abdomen, because this story is going to force you to do it anyway. Go ahead, Ashley.
Well, I actually didn't find it funny as much as I found it ongoing on a simple thing with devices, which we talked about before, which were devices, and the medical devices that are not being tested and everybody thinks are so safe. And here we have babies who have to have circumcisions, or certain religions believe absolute circumcision, and certain people believe for health reasons they need circumcision. And the clamps are actually put over the head of the personal penis, private part, I'm saying this quietly, and as they put it over the private part, they are accidentally cutting off the head of the penis.
Ouch!
So it's an absolute tragedy. There have been, over the last 11 years, there have been 139 additional reports of 51 injuries, and it's called a Mogen clamp. And here are moms innocently going, yes, go ahead, you know, circumcise my baby, and we're perfectly fine by it. And it turns out that it's actually injuring a lot of babies. So I think, again, because we talked about medical devices in the past, this is one that one should actually maybe think about twice and ask about what device, know about the device that's being used. Don't assume the person about to do it hasn't checked into the fact of what device is being used. So then moving on from there.
Hold on one second. Let me guess. The offending device is known in the trade as the Lorena Bobbitt machine.
I can't even imagine having a baby that is so perfect, and then 2 seconds later hearing the screams of this baby from, you know, one more device that hasn't been checked. And what gets me is, how does the FDA allow this device to how do you allow a device like this to remain on the market right now? How does that happen?
Well, the real question is, how come no one ever tells anybody about this? I have a son. I can't imagine that my son being circumcised and having a doctor come out and tell me, whoops. I mean, so when they screw this up, do you think they tell the parents?
No, I mean, one family just got paid $10.8 million.
Yeah, I mean, to me it's just, and worse than that, the child has no vote, which is one of the things that drives me nuts with all of this stuff is, you know, here you have this health problem, and no one seems to give this, the child just wakes up one day when he's much older and goes, what happened to me?
Oh, this poor one child, oh my gosh, that they paid the $10.8 million to. He's had to go through plastic surgery after plastic surgery since he was 2 years old, and he's now eight. I mean, it's the extreme of the devices, yet I think it's an example of the devices.
Well, let's not quit there. I mean, we had another patient die from lap band surgery. Ash and I have, in fact, we did a whole show back, I think, in February 29th on that, or it was late February, about how they have all these 100 get thin signs. They have huge billboards along Sunset Boulevard in West Hollywood. I mean, the biggest ones you've ever seen. But no one that this would say all the different things that can happen to you. Well, every time I turn around, I see some note that somebody's died from a lap band surgery. This one was in Orange County. She was the fifth person to die shortly after the procedure at the clinics associated with this 100 get thin. So anybody who's considering it, looking at this billboard, needs to say five people have died recently.
At just one clinic. Just
yeah.
One clinic.
And this is in the last year and a half, okay? So.
Oh, well, I think it's even more troublesome. I'm trying to wind my mind back to the program that we talked about this, but it seems to me that more than 50% of the people that get lap bands have them taken off again afterwards.
Well, no, not so replaced with a new one. Leaks, not properly done, internal bleeding, multiple side effects, and by the way, most of what you hear about is just the deaths because the other ones become malpractice actions where they deny everything. But when the guy's laying there dead or a woman on the, you know, on the bed, it's pretty hard for you to say, oops, wasn't malpractice. So besides that, and this is just, by the way, this is just in the Los Angeles area, okay? Orange County also. Granted, it's 15 million people, that's only, you know, 5%, 4% of the population. So you can multiply this out. So in our neighborhood, it turns out there was a 55-year-old guy who died also that I hadn't read about. I mean, died at Valley Surgical Center, and you would think we would have seen it in the local papers.
Another clinic.
Another one.
Different clinic.
But Ashley's favorite, which is the one in Beverly Hills, called the Beverly Hills Surgery Center, has had three patients die. Okay? Three.
But the only announcement was five patients every year and a half when they put it in the paper. So we're not hearing about these three here and two over there and five over there and...
Those were the 1-800 get thin in Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
So it didn't include all these other ones. So, you know, I mean, you can't believe. Since I understand, looking at what they said, they've done more than 100,000 people called in the first 15 months that they had these big billboards up, and they scheduled more than 10,000 surgeries, and they basically just ran this whole advertising things. You know, the surgeries cost $12,000 to $20,000, and they're done in clinics, so the profit on them is just gigantic. So this is temptation for quick profits because, gee, what would you rather do? Do a lap band surgery for $20,000 or treat an 80-year-old woman who's hypertensive and has Medicare? So what's happening is they basically are using these alternate or, you know, ancillary treatments to make money. I know I had a client in East L.A. who gave up Medicare, Medicaid, and all these different things because he wasn't making enough money, and in a small hospital decided to start doing penis implants, breast implants, and lap band surgeries, and turned himself into a multimillionaire, giving up Medicare and Medicaid practice and going for these surgeries. But he also got sued a lot more times, said, oh, well, you know, I'm making more than $1 million a year. I guess I can afford lawyers. And that was his attitude. So in part, we're forcing doctors who are greedy. If we separate the real doctors from those guys who go to medical school to make money and prestige, they opt for these choices, right, Ashley?
Right. But this one must be usually obese, right, Manny? Was she, like, massive?
Well, I didn't give a weight, so... If it did, what she was what?
5'5", 160 pounds. She was 20 pounds to 30 pounds overweight. So they have taken this device with the lap band, and they're now saying, oh, you know, another device. Hey, this device is going to work. Well, first of all, it's made with silicone. The same silicone that's used in was used in the breast implants that caused cancer that had been banned. It has never been tested. Another device, never tested. So, but that's okay. We're going to put it in the patient anyway, and we're going to just leave it in there, and it'll work. But obviously it's not, right?
Yeah.
Right.
What
bothers me is 20 to 30 pounds overweight is nothing. It's a drop in the bucket.
In Texas, that makes you a model, right? In Iowa, that makes you an underfed, herfer.
No, but I mean, you know, being absolutely serious, you cannot class 20 to 30 pounds overweight as the person being obese. I mean, that makes no sense.
It's sad. It's sad that we have a society that is showing women all these fabulous magazines, and this is the way you should look, and how fabulous this is. This is you perfect. As opposed to get on the bike, do a little exercise, and guess what? That 20 to 30 pounds will drop off and change your diet.
And I want to add something as a lawyer. This is, to me, the ultimate when you know people are out of line. And their name is the Omidi brothers, O-M-I-D-I. Might as well name names. You know, they basically run these clinics, and every time the LA Times and anyone works for the Times covers these surgery deaths and raises the issues that's in this article, they've sued them. So they sued the LA Times for libel because of this. In each case, the judge dismissed, I think there were three lawsuits, and ordered these guys to pay the LA Times legal expenses and fees in two of the cases so far. And so basically, this is one of this group of people trying to make money doing something dishonest, in my opinion, okay? And basically, they then followed by suing everything. And out of nowhere, who are they represented by? Brian Oxman, okay, who represented the Jackson family for a while and has been the subject of a lot of commentary. I've known Brian a lot of years. I don't think he's been himself in a while, and representing them, I think, is not one of his better choices in life, and we'll leave it at that. Ashley, you have any comments?
I'm going to leave this no comment. I could go on for the entire month on this person.
Okay.
We're going to leave it alone.
All right, no. Before we move on, though, this whole lap band world smacks a bit of the Florida pill mills. You know, obviously it's a completely different, situation, but it's just people out to make money, not fix health problems.
But we are creating this with the dishonest way that Congress and the rest of it manages health, Medicare, Medicaid, blaming things on the doctors, slashing costs, not paying them, a million other things they do. So there are always those people in society that look for an easier way to make a living, whether it's honest or not, because they can't do it the other way. And I'm not condoning or justifying them. I'm just saying that we are creating, much like we have increases in bankruptcy and in bank robberies and other forms of dishonesty, doctors and other people in the medical business are not immune from the pressures of the economy, especially when they live a high life. Ashley, you had a comment.
With the lap band, the thing that bothers me the most is the big fat line. You go get your lap band, you're going to be perfectly fine. Well, guess what? You're going to have to do a diet no matter what. They put that band in, they put this around your stomach, so you got this tiny little tiny stomach then. You can only do liquids for X amount of period of time. You have to cut back on your food dramatically. You're still going to get MSG in the food that you're taking because you don't know you're supposed to switch the food. So they don't even really work on your diet, which is part of the reason many of them fail. But you're still going to have to diet. You're still going to have to exercise. You're still going to have to change your life. They had a show on where they had a one-ton man and a one-ton woman. And with them both, beforehand, the man had to lose, he had to go on a liquid diet before he did his surgery. And after he did his surgery, he had to do an even more drastic diet. So no matter what, you're going to have to change your diet. So why do this lap band and be lied to?
It makes no sense to me whatsoever.
And the big lie, Simon, the big lie to me, too, is, and you're no longer going to be a diabetic and you're no longer going to have high blood pressure. Well, of course not. You've changed your diet.
Well, and that's for how long, you know? Because I've seen people have lap band surgeries who can't restrain their eating because they're addicted to fast foods, and they immediately start having all the problems that Ashley describes. As they struggle with eating, they get bulimic. There's a million side effects to this that are just really awful that they don't mention. And I've never seen one of their written disclosures, but I'll bet you anything it does not disclose all of these potential outcomes.
Right, and let me guess, this is not covered by normal health insurance.
I wouldn't think so. First of all, if you're a 110 man, I'm not sure who's going to cover you anyway. So, you know, just factor that in there. You sort of have a problem going through the door, don't you?
Yes, indeed.
You know, what bothers me is this is a desperation move. And anytime you make a health decision desperately, you're going to have a very bad result. There's just no other way of looking at it. You know, you know what happens is people look for shortcuts, they look for solutions because they don't want to take the long haul. And a lap band surgery gives you that illusion, but if truth be told, it is not a solution because it requires the same solution as doing it the hard way. So basically these people end up either having it removed because they don't follow the rules and the rules as in what you have to do after the surgery, and they end up right back where they started. So they're now $20,000 into this, and all they've had is a frustrating, painful experience. I mean, what good does that do?
Right. Well, is there any control exercised, at a governmental level?
No, and it's going to take a few more people to die. Again, you know, I joke that things are never really reported until people die. And in this case, this is finally coming to light more because people are dying. But if people weren't dying, you wouldn't hear about it. So at some point, the state or other people are going to get proactive. Then, of course, people like Michelle Bachmann are going to go, we have too much government regulation, and that's what I see happening. So you know, either that or what they'll do is someone like a governor's relative or somebody will go in and have the surgery and die, and they'll incense somebody because it's too close to the hierarchy, and suddenly it'll become a cause célèbre in this country. So the right person hasn't died. And
That's terrible, Manny.
Well, I mean, I'm telling the truth.
I know. You are telling the truth.
Yeah, I mean, someone needs to die who matters enough for people to want to change the law. Now,
it's like Michael Jackson. For me, that's the reason these laws are going to change with what drugs are available to people and the manner in which they're being administered, because I think that this is now put up in everybody's face. And you're right, Manny, with the lap band, if this lap band had happened to Michael Jackson and Michael Jackson or LaToya had died or somebody in the family had died, this would be up in everybody's face and everyone would see all the things we're talking about, because they would put them up on court saying, you know, this, you're still going to have to change your diet. Did they tell you that? No. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was Kanye West's mother died in South Los Angeles after a lap band surgery. And, you know, he wasn't powerful enough to alter it. But somewhere in here they will get the wrong person, and that's what happens in general. And by the way, that happens in other laws. I always tell this story that while I was in law school, you know, I come back to White, Texas at various times on the murder club, has laws that are different. Well, my generation had strong feelings about them because during the 60s, if you drove through Texas and you had long hair, the police would pull you over in these small towns, and they would hold you long, charge you with a crime, give you a bad time, and then cut all your hair off and go, oh, well, we dismiss it, and then they would send these kids on their way, you know, just literally shocked and whatever. So one day they made a mistake, and they picked the wrong kid, whose father was a famous lawyer, who I'll leave nameless. And they did that to him, and he went crazy, and he started suing these small towns in Texas, and they went up to the Supreme Court, and they really got nailed for violating civil rights. So, you know, this goes on all the time. It's sort of like watching a Clint Eastwood movie, and the bad guys pick the wrong person to pick a fight with. And that's what's going to happen here, Simon. I mean, that sounds strange, doesn't it?
Oh, it sounds horrible, but it makes perfect sense. You know, everything is fine until the wrong person gets involved.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I had a personal experience that listeners might find funny, because everybody would like to get up in the face of someone giving them a ticket. And Ash and I were late for a charity event, and I wasn't going horribly fast on Mulholland Drive, but probably faster than I should. And I get pulled over by this guy in a weird-looking truck, and I said, who are you? And he said, well, I'm with the Conservancy, which is, you know, the Coastal Commission in California, which guards the coast, and this is part of our jurisdiction, and you were exceeding the speed limit. I got you on radar.
It was like 4 or 5 miles. It was not. We weren't speeding, really. Stop.
You're always trying to apologize for me. I probably was going above the speed limit, but it wasn't an awful lot, and it wasn't that big a deal. I mean, if you consider that I was driving on a mountain road with no cross lights, no traffic, nothing, and it's a Saturday morning, and I don't think we didn't even pass a car. So anyway, to make a long story short, I said to him, you don't have any legal authority here. He says, well, I have legal authority on the Coastal Commission. I said, no, you don't. And he said, don't tell me that. You don't have legal authority. And I was starting to get out of the car, and he said, don't get out of your car. And he starts grabbing his gun. And I said to him, I don't know who you are, who you think you are, but you're doing this to the wrong person, because you have no authority under the state law to do this. And he says, well, yes, I do, and you can complain to court. And I said, oh, you have a court? Where's your court? Because obviously I know better. There is no court. So he kept running around in circles trying to blow me off, and he gave me a kick. And I said to him, if you have a court, I'm going to see you there, and you're headed for a world of hurt, because I said, you're wrong, you're violating the law, you're intimidating people, what you're doing is unconstitutional, and you're dangerous to society. You're not even a cop. And I said, if you're not careful, someone's going to shoot you one day for impersonating a cop because of what you're doing. I said, what you're doing is totally wrong. So I got it, and I sent him a letter demanding a trial. I never hear back from him. I sent him another letter demanding a trial. I don't hear back from him. I sent him a letter saying, where's the court? I want to appear, and I want to, you know, meet my obligations as a citizen and appear before the judge and pay the fine. And Ashley kept saying to me, why are you doing this? So let go of it. And I kept
this
saying,
stuff makes me shake. I just shake and hide in the corner, and I'm the mouse, and he's the lion.
So finally, I mean, they just stopped responding to me. And then I get a note from some server saying, the Coastal Commission has fined you $400 for failing to appear, et cetera, et cetera. And that was the end for me. So I wrote a letter to a member of the California state government, who's a friend of Ash's and I, and one time was the attorney general, so you can imagine the kind of power he has. And I said, enough. I said, I don't want any favors. Just give me the direct address. I said, I believe, and I still believe, these people work out of Barbra Streisand's home at the beach. I mean, it's not like I don't know anything about them. And so he assigned a state attorney general for the sole purpose of just giving me the information I wanted, because he also felt it was inappropriate for them to deny information to a citizen in the state. No special favors, okay? So I guess the special favor was to recognize my name, and to that extent, yes, I got a special favor. So now I write to them, and I have their address with one of those, I know where you are. That was not well received. So guess what? I got a notice almost immediately that everything was dismissed. And now, about, a couple years later, several years later, there was an article in the LA Times that other people have finally discovered what I've discovered, and they are furious, and now they're running expose articles on it, and they're probably going to stop this practice in California. But for a period of time, they got away with collecting hundreds of thousands of dollars, which they used to balance the budget of the Coastal Commission. And that's the kind of dishonesty we're talking about in American government and other places, and sneaking around, that I think is so detrimental to our country. And I forgot why I started to tell this story, but I hope it was interesting to everybody.
It's a great story. I do like it, and I will bear it in mind if ever I get one of those tickets.
Yeah, well, South Mulholland Drive. That's bottom line. But, you know, let's move on to something equally serious. So Ash and I raise this constant comment, and anyone who goes to our site, howtoeliminatepain.com or Blogger Newsnet, Simon and both of us have articles on foodborne illnesses and how they're not paying attention, and we always say, gee, you know, they don't say anything until people die. So last couple of days on the news, you've probably seen that the death toll was up to 13 for listeria on that cantaloupe recall that we did. Remember that, Simon?
Oh, indeed.
Well, the death toll really is 16, so the news even had that wrong. And what bothers me is, I mean, we raised the question, 2 weeks ago, Ashley?
Right.
And it had just...
It was actually last week.
Yeah, but it was a week ago before. So on September 15th,
right,
they announced the recall. Now they admit the recall's been going on for 2 months. So that means for a month they didn't tell anybody about this listeria from cantaloupe. So now the death tolls are going up, everything is going up, and they're going, oh, well, we released this recall for 2 months ago. Well, I checked the FDA, and it was on September 15th. So, again, we have a situation that unless people die from E. coli and listeria and all the rest of them, they just don't say anything, right, Ashley?
Yes, and the biggest problem, and they know this, they know the one thing that the listeria has is what's called a long incubation period. It can take, after you eat it, 1 to 3 weeks, and in some cases 2 months for the listeria to show up. So here they are 2 months ago, they knew about this, it's now showing up. And only 2 weeks ago, they're telling people. So this thing can last, 2 months ago, someone could have eaten it and have listeria right now. So it's unlike salmonella and the other bacteria that you know right away. This one harbors a while, and it continues to grow in your refrigerator, which is why I said last week, if you've got a cantaloupe, take it back to the store, because a lot of them are unmarked from this particular maker, and there's no way of knowing. And for me, I'm staying away from cantaloupe for the moment, just until they clear up and clear out and figure out what's going on with it.
And until they started being more honest with all of us, right, Simon? Because the truth is...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, do you know what to believe out of this? I don't.
I'll tell you what. We have an old friend who wants to join us. Would you mind if I brought Lunchbox onto the panel?
Well, just as long as he's got a snack for us.
An organic snack.
Did you bring us a snack today?
No, I have not.
Well, your days are numbered, my friend. No, just kidding.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm surprised you guys remember me.
Well, of course we do.
I was thinking when you were discussing about just the dishonesty in the healthcare. And I know personally doctors that Michigan's finally started getting into the plastic surgery. And if I was just looking at the numbers, between 2001 and 2010, just the sheer numbers of plastic surgeries, they've gone through the roof.
Oh, yeah. They're inventing them so fast you can hardly keep up with them.
What numbers did you come up with? Do you have them in front of you?
In 2001, the lipoplasty was at 385,390, eyelid surgery 246,338. I mean, eyelid surgery?
Yeah.
Because if people don't look young, they figure no one's going to want them, which is a sad state of affairs to me.
Yeah, there are some legitimate reasons for them. I actually had this surgery because I had a tumor removed from the back of my eye, which was scary. It looked like my eye was popping out in a sci-fi movie, and my vision was going. So when they removed it, they had to do eyelid surgery because my eyes wouldn't look the same after having to remove the tumor. And it made sense, but, you know, to do it cosmetically, I mean, I got bigger worries what my eyelids look like, and I think the average male does. So pandering to women who are, you know, insecure to me to make a living to me is quite sick. And that's what they're doing. Don't you agree, Lunchbox, with pandering?
Yeah, I do. And you got to understand, there's a difference between a non-elective surgery causing an after effect. You know, and for your case, it's understandable. But, you know, these are completely, I don't think they're talking about non-elective surgeries. I think talking about just.
No, they're talking about people who want to alter their appearance because they're dissatisfied with their appearance. And that, to me, is one of the biggest problems in our country is we've gone from loving women and people for what's inside of them to loving people because of the way they look, and that contributes greatly to our increase in divorce and a lot of other problems we have in our country.
Right. I do have a question to ask you. With the whole Michael Jackson thing and using the surgical anesthetic to knock him out, which caused him to have a heart attack, do you think there's, you know, with just the huge dishonesty that took place there, I mean, obviously this doctor was not being ethical.
Well, there's several things involved. One is Ash and I found some humor in it, but it's really not humorous. Is the guy had like 4 gallons of it. And, I mean, when does that start alerting somebody that something's wrong? And part of this blame belongs on Michael Jackson, and in this sense. This has been a problem in Hollywood since I was a child growing up in Hollywood. Doctors who catered to celebrities. Look at Howard Hughes. He had doctors that ran around and catered to him for years and kept him going in a way that no other American would have been kept alive and living. So if you have enough money, the point is you can buy anything. And if you look around society and find somebody with a few financial problems or things aren't going quite right for them, they're more vulnerable to this. So there are lots of doctors like him that are vulnerable to these problems because of problems in the lifestyle, you know, XY problems or whatever. So it's a combination of somebody who doesn't want to meet the rules. And in my personal observations of Michael Jackson, and I've actually was involved with a variety of different actions with the family throughout the years, some I can't talk about. And the simple fact is that I felt that Michael's had a drug problem since I've known him. I think that basically the whole world has catered to him and his family have ignored him. And this is nothing new about what you're hearing. The difference is he found a doctor who was willing to compromise and treat him in a way that society should not allow him to treat him. Go ahead, Ashley.
I also think one of the biggest, Mandy and I were talking about this yesterday, because the most disturbing thing to me is the change in the medical profession. And one of the changes in the medical profession is, years ago, that doctor would not have dared do this without having a registered nurse sit by the bedside checking his vital signs and looking him over. And if he had $150,000 a month to pay this doctor, if that really is true, then that doctor, you know, Michael certainly could have had, you know, round-the-clock nurses or somebody to sit by or take care of him. To literally take care of him, because that needed to be blood pressure, everything else, especially with an anesthesia drug. Oh, my gosh.
Well, I respectfully disagree with you on 2 scores. Number one, this has been going in Hollywood since I was before I was born, probably. And one of my first experiences practicing law in Beverly Hills was with a doctor who had a tendency to sell amphetamines and other things to a variety of different celebrities, and he was sort of the go-to guy for actresses who had to work long location nights. And I mean, there have been a lot of famous actresses. Judy Garland's an example of someone who became addicted to drugs because the studio got her addicted to drugs. So there's this long history in Hollywood that leaves a lot to be desired. And there's always been a doctor who's willing to do this.
Well, my question, do you think that there will be a change in legislation when it comes to doctors and how far they're allowed to go?
Well, I believe that this has been an area of concern that's debated, particularly here in California, more than others because of this constant problem with celebrities doing too much drugs. I had a kid I grew up with who I became his guardian ad litem. I would describe it as a court-appointed guardian over his affairs. His father was a founder of one of the major studios, and he had a very troubled childhood, and he did too much drugs. But he always found somebody that could prescribe them for him, and he was into Demerol. And we're talking about the mid-70s when I was a young man just out of law school. And he had no trouble at all finding a doctor to give him Demerol. And when you're worth millions and millions of dollars, money talks and you can get what you want. So in California, they threaten, they do stings, they do all sorts of things, but, you know, there's always someone on the edge. And I always remember the words of a teacher of mine who I had for study hall when I was in college, a famous football coach who used to say to us, "I don't make men. You know, basically teachers and playground people make men out of children. By the time I get them, it's too late." Well, that's true of medical school and law school. By the time a kid gets to that part of school, he has morality or he doesn't have morality, and nothing they teach in school is going to change. So if we have this problem in society, it's because society as a whole is failing teaching morality at various levels of our society. And maybe I become cynical about it, but that's the failing I see, and that's my complaint with where our government is about screwing up our schools badly. We are going to pay for this in the long haul, as we already have for the Ebonics period of the 90s where kids got a lesser education. We're paying for that, and that's the problem. So I hope there's a better answer.
90s? Have you heard about the education and what's going on in Michigan right now?
Well, everywhere. It's not everywhere. It's not just Michigan. There was an article about how Long Beach, which is, you know, very close to Los Angeles, actually it butts on Los Angeles on the beach. Recently, Long Beach was being told they were going to be cut another $30 million off a small school thing. They've already closed up two schools, consolidated things. They have 30-some kids in a class, and after the next move, they're going to be up, they estimate, somewhere around 35 to 40 kids per class. You can't teach in that atmosphere.
Lunchbox.
Wow. Yes.
I might be incorrect here, but Detroit, haven't they just closed something like 40 schools?
Yeah.
Between Detroit, Flint, and a few other districts, it's getting pretty bad up here. And right now, our governor Rick Schneider is basically just trying to run over the teachers with a bulldozer. It's getting bad.
Yeah. Well, are they closing any schools in Bloomfield Hills or Grosse Pointe?
I haven't looked into Bloomfield Hills. I don't believe so. Bloomfield Hills is like Novi. It's a nicer section.
Oh, I know. It's like the Beverly Hills of I know Detroit fairly well, and that's always been where the executives of the car dealers generally move and live, and it's a kind of a closed section. But the point is, it trickles down to them last, right?
Typically, yeah. You're talking about higher tax brackets, so you know, normally they get hit last. But we're talking about Saginaw, Detroit, Flint. Oh, yeah, they're getting hurt bad, and Rick Schneider is not helping.
If you look at, you go over to Wisconsin, right next door, and Wisconsin's having an equally different problem.
With the unions?
Every phase, yeah. So, but the problem to me is, rather than, there's two issues to me if you want to go over to politics for a moment. One is, they talk about solving the debt. Every day you see a list of things. We've had, $200 to $300 billion disappear through contractors that have just been stolen through the Iraqi and Afghanistan war. Gee, you know, I don't see them suing these companies that stole the money because they're too well politically connected. But that has a big impact on on our national debt and the rest of the problems we're experiencing. I mean, you take a look around at what some of these issues are. Every day there's some news brief about how they found some money has been stolen or this has been done. If we cure those problems alone in our society and in the United States as it is, then we can do wonders for what for changing our debt ceiling. I mean, right now I could point out over $1 trillion in stolen and lost money in our country through failed programs that basically go to the hands of the rich corporations. And until we stop that, we are not going to have money for schools and other things, and cutting Medicare and cutting the benefits to the elderly are not going to make this problem go away.
Actually, Manny, I have the perfect title for your book on the subject, The Bridge to Nowhere.
Oh, yeah, I'm still trying to find the 1,000 points of light, but, you know, very frankly, Ash and I point a finger at Ronald Reagan, and Ronald Reagan did an awful lot of good for this country, but he did a couple things that really upset me, and even some of my friends. I have a friend who was a very close friend family friend of the Reagans and defend him all the time. And but you can't defend one thing. He basically just took a position that Americans should take care of their own family members who have mental health problems, and he just basically let them all out in the streets. And the facts are they cost more money on the streets and have created more problems there, and we really haven't saved money. He cut back on education in the way that started really the problem we have now. The worst thing we did in this country is eliminate Operation Head Start. My generation has a generation of African-American lawyers, doctors, et cetera. This younger generation is not going to be able to say the same because they are not educating children when they're young enough to stay equal with every part of our society. So what we're doing is we're creating two classes of people, those who can afford education and some that don't. And that's the problem you're going to have in places like Michigan. In the advantaged areas, the families can afford to send them to better schools, therefore they get better educations, therefore they get better jobs. In the end, we have more discrimination than we've ever had, and we have more class distinction. Right, Simon?
Absolutely. And you are so good at finding my hot buttons.
I don't think your wife wants to know that I make you hot, Simon.
I don't even want to hear this.
I mean, I have been so annoyed for so long over the No Child Left Behind initiative, which to me basically equated to No Child Allowed to Move Forward. And so I was kind of happy when I heard that Obama was going to do something about it. Indeed, he has. He's changed the whole scheme. Now it's no state allowed to move forward.
it really is disappointing where this has gone. And what we've done is created artificial standards, particularly the Bush administration, and then tied teachers' hands behind their backs and made it impossible for them to productively teach, and then blamed them when things failed in the schools. I mean, how fair is that? I mean,
it's not fair. You know, I hate it. You know, education is the single most important thing that you can give a child.
Absolutely.
It's also our biggest investment in the future of our country.
Right.
We're what, ranked number, was it 19 in the world, or was it 29 in the world on high school graduations now?
Yeah, but you have to understand that most of that is directed towards the statistics gleaned from public school. And if you factor in private schools, then the statistics are dramatically different. So, and that's one of the things that bothers me when I hear all these statistics about how we're failing. No, we're failing in the public school system because nobody cares about the public school system.
Well, because I went to public school, and it was that's the only place you had to go get an education. You went to public school. And to think that children don't have a choice on it, and listening to friends who have sent children to private school and the extra jobs they have to do and the things they have to do to get the kids into private school, it's really a mess.
Yeah.
It's unfair, too. You should be able to go to your local private school.
And I'll tell you, Lunchbox, in my life, my brothers went to public schools, and by the time I came along, I was the youngest of four. My parents were so disgusted with the public school system, they sent me to private Catholic schools. And there's no question that I'm better educated than my brothers and more successful, in part because of that education. But the point is that back in the 50s and the early 60s, most Americans were not happy with the school system then. And you look back at movies like remember Blackboard Jungle? The Jimmy Dean classic? Well, that was intended as a commentary on our failing schools. So this problem's been around a long, long time. And so when they make these comparisons, I find myself saying, you know, guys, this has always been a problem. That's why Operation Head Start was pushed through by Kennedy and ultimately made happen by Johnson, is because everybody felt that the schools were failing so bad, we had to change them. So what makes us different now? None, except what we've done is split the schools between the rich and the poor. So at the end of the day, the poorer kids are still getting a poor education as they did in my generation, and the children whose parents are willing to work two jobs as mine did, their children got a little better education. Go ahead,
but Manny, do you think that the influence is going to change because of the fact that so many people are unemployed and it's tough getting a job? So if it's tough getting a job and so many people are unemployed, and that statement I said earlier, they have to work two and three jobs, those jobs may not be available. So therefore, these private schools, or these children are now going to have to go to public school. They're going to be part of the percentage you're talking about, Lunchbox.
Well, you're right. And that's also becoming a problem, is less people are going to be able to afford private schools, which means the enrollment's going to start dropping. At a time when it's critical mass in the public school, their enrollment will probably go up. So, yes, Ash, I totally agree with you. That is a problem. And I'm sure you see that in your own area, right, Lunchbox? There's a big discrepancy between the quality of teaching from one school to the other.
Well, there is, depending on the area. You can even see it within the public schools, you know, Saginaw School District and, let's say, Carleton. Carleton's a more wealthy white area, no offense, but it's wealthy white people.
Yeah.
But I do want to say this. I don't know if it's really public versus private schools that really make a difference, because I went to public schools, and I'm considered quite, educated, quite well educated. For example, and this is where I'm going to go with this, I think it has to do with morality, how parents teach their kids, teach them work ethic, stick by their education, and it's not happening anymore. For example, private school, right by where I live. It's a Catholic school, private school, and it has the highest pregnancy rate in the entire county for schools.
Well, when I was growing up, there's a high school, which coincidentally we live pretty close to right now, that we sort of dubbed the baby factory because of its high pregnancy rate in the early 1960s. So it was becoming a problem there. But no, I do think that the discrepancy between public and private schools has widened substantially since your time. And one of the reasons that it's widened is because the quality of the parents who feel they have children who are better suited to private school are taking their higher percentages to there. So what happens is the percentage of successful children drops in these other schools because the better students have gone on to private schools. I'll give an example. You look at Brooklyn at the early days and during the Depression, which has now become somewhat of the birthplace of so many great Americans. And I've had a lot of clients, billionaires, who were raised in Brooklyn during that period. And yes, it was primarily Eastern Jews, but one of the things you learn from growing up around those people is their parents say to them, you're Jewish, the people are anti-Semitic, you will never get a job, you can't work for these big corporations, so you need to get a profession. And they push their children to get professions because, not because they want all their children to be doctors or lawyers, because they're scared to death that if they don't get an education, they won't be able to get a job when they're older. So that fear, I think, increases education sometimes, too. If you keep telling a child from the time they're born, if you don't get a better education, you're going to starve in this world, I think they get the point, don't you?
Well, it goes back to how your parents raised you, you know. And
right.
You know, my parents were pretty good with education. My father was prototype planning for Ford without any college. He designed some of their software that they still use probably to this day. I mean, so, you know, he was self-educated, so was I.
Yeah, but that's fine, too. But the fact is you had the skills to attend any school you probably wanted if the good Lord had blessed you with the finances to make choices like Harvard, Yale, et cetera, and you wanted to apply yourself. But a great many people in this country, no matter what they do, are limited in what they do. And with the increased costs in tuition, which we're really experiencing here in California.
Oh, it's terrible.
And as what I understand from friends, the cost of University of Michigan, for example, has just reached an unbelievable number. So if you're going to do that, then yes, in the long run, what you're going to do is eliminate people who can quite probably be better students for you. And that's what happens. You end up with a lesser student in a school system because the better students go elsewhere.
Well, I've noticed that a lot more kids are going to local schools now, CMU, SVSU here in Michigan.
Eastern Michigan also.
Yep, Eastern Michigan University. And they're not going, they're like my evil ex. She had the opportunity, she was granted to go to Michigan State University. And she turned them down to go to our local school because she couldn't afford it. It was just too much.
So has MooU become that expensive?
Which one?
Well, most of my friends call Michigan State MooU. I have a lot of friends who are Michigan State grads.
It's up to, I think, $26,000 or so a semester.
Yeah.
Oh, my master.
Well, let me give you a comparison. When I started USC in 1962, it was $600 a semester, $1,200 a year. You could actually work in the summer and pay your tuition. Well, my daughter's last tuition, I think, was $17,000 a year. A friend of mine had...
You mean a semester?
A year. But Killen's a long time ago. Now it's about 45 to 50 med schools. Oh, 65 or 70. A friend of mine, a doctor, had a son go to SC Med School, and they did him a big favor because he was a professor at SC, and they gave him a 10% discount. And as he said, $65,000, and they're giving me a 10% discount. I mean, so yeah. And if we're going to take that position, then essentially what we're doing is back to where we were during the Depression, where education belonged to the elitist, and so. Therefore, what we're going to have is a group of educated people that are essentially from the super wealthy because no one else can afford it. And that's
okay,
what my concerns are.
I see a real issue here. A kid has the need to learn, the want to learn, the ability to learn, and he or she gets a degree, and right off the bat, they effectively have a mortgage around their heads. Huge millstone. I mean, oh my, I don't want to be there. You know? You now owe $100,000, and you...
And you can't get a job.
Right.
Well, they're saying 8 months. It takes an average of 8 months to find a job after you graduate from college. And that's if you don't go into a very saturated market.
Right.
Right.
But, you know, when I got out of college in the 60s, the market was that bad, too. The one thing they don't say about the Vietnamese War is that without the war, the country was headed for deep financial problems. And Bush can say what he wants. He used the Iraq and the rest of them to balance the American budget because we were in financial trouble back then, too. I mean, if Bush hadn't done that, I don't know how, other than creating this false housing bubble, he could have at all saved the economy. And because we were headed in this direction. And, you know, and it's funny because I would tell all of my clients in the stock business during that period of time, and most people look at me, my own wife who's sitting next to me would say to me, "Why are you so negative?" He said, "Geez, you just sound like, you know, this dreary person about our economy." I look at her like, "You have no idea what's coming." And sadly, all of my predictions came true. And so a lot of this was very obvious. And when someone asked me, "Are we going to go into Iraq?" And I said, "Probably, because, you know, if Bush doesn't do that, how is he going to get money to his friends in the defense industry?" And although we've made a huge amount of progress, we've had companies like Blackwater, who, in my opinion, have taken huge amounts of American dollars and really performed very little services. Someone should investigate Halliburton and make them pay back their excessive amounts of money. And by the way, do you know what Blackwater did? They changed their name to XCE Enterprises, moved to Dubai, and are now parking all the profits they're making off the war in Dubai. So, Simon, you got a comment on that one?
Yes, I do. I knew that Blackwater was going to enter into this discussion. I knew it early on. What they're doing is horrible. It's disgusting. As is Halliburton. It shouldn't be allowed, but guess what? They have the clout. They have the political clout. We're just moving to Dubai because the climate's better. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're moving to a country where you can't kiss your girlfriend on a park bench. Imagine that. It's a wild country. In fact, Ash and I are having a discussion with a friend of ours who lives in Europe and runs TV stations in Europe about how wacky it is there. And because I believe his ex-wife still lives in Dubai and does business there. So to make a long story short, it's a strange country. And for an American country, a company to move there, there can be no other reason than profits and hiding money. Right now, most Americans don't realize that American corporations are parking somewhere around $1.5 trillion in foreign banks and basically not using the money here in the United States. And they're unwilling to bring it back while they're negotiating with the U.S. to get a lower tax rate so they can keep this money. So if you want to improve jobs in the U.S., it would seem to me that these companies need to bring the money back. And if their sole purpose is to make money and go to another country with it, do we really want to give the Halliburton and all these people work to do for the U.S. government? I just don't think we should be giving money to anybody who takes their business abroad. And
continue to give them tax.
Oh, I agree. Sorry.
Do you feel the same way, Lunchbox, about that?
Yeah, actually, I couldn't have said it better myself. We got to. You know, we're fighting to, you know, the states are fighting individually trying to keep jobs, you know, in their state. We're fighting with countries, entire countries abroad, and yet we're still giving them tax incentives and all this. No, if they're going to take their jobs and basically screw over the American people, stop buying their products. Stop giving them incentives.
Well, okay, what annoys me greatly is, you know, when the phone rings, I pick it up, and someone wants to sell me something, I in fact treat it as a bit of a game, and I weasel out what the company is and where they're calling from. I mean, how can a call center in India know anything about what I want to do in Picayune, Mississippi?
Well, I have a friend of ours, our computer tech, grew up in India, but came to the United States, educated here, and stayed. And he's offended by those calls.
But I love the fact that you just ask for an American, and they have to get you an American.
Actually, they don't.
To talk to a U.S. representative, and they have to get it for you. So you just have an extra couple minutes you have to wait, and they've got to get a representative. So I no longer even deal with the people from India because I have the same feeling, Simon. How do they know what we want? And I don't want to have to repeat it five times. I just want to say it.
Well, I'm a computer technician by trade.
Uh-huh.
And I just so enjoy the phone calls, where I have to, where are you from? Hi, I'm Bob. Really? They what is Hindu for Bob?
Well, and what bothers me about them is all they know is what they're trained to say. So to me, they're like talking parrots, And they read off this spiel, and if you ask them any kind of unusual question, they freeze because they're not prepared to that. I will have to ask my supervisor,
Yes. You're causing flashbacks right now.
Simon, by the way, is about as good on computers as you'll find. And
he's brilliant. He's just brilliant.
Yeah, and you guys have a similar tech background. For the normal people, this is just the worst experience in the world. Just simple things that used to take a few minutes in life now take forever, and you're shipped around four different continents with the same answer. The other issue that bothers me about it all is not only losing American jobs, but the fact is it just allows these companies to get away with what I consider less service. We are not a service-oriented country. As profits have gone up and the markets have become where they are, we are in a take-it-or-leave-it economy. When a big corporation says, what do you want? They offer you something, and you take it or you leave it. And I think you feel the same way. It's no longer important whether you're happy. They say your happiness is important, but if you judge them by what they do, American corporations, I don't think give a shit. Does anybody disagree with me?
No. I don't.
Well, I'm shocked if anyone else does. When I was a kid, you went to a gas station, all those stories about how they used to, do your windows, do everything else. Now if they say hello, there's a charge for it.
Yes, service really doesn't exist anymore, or full service doesn't exist anymore.
Well, how about any service? Let's get past the full service. There really is there an area in this economy or in your life where you feel that you get the kind of service that is reminiscent of what made America great? And the answer is probably not, right?
No, it's not what it used to be.
Oh.
Well, I had to make a phone call the other day. I forget who it was to. But the phone call required me to wait on hold for 10 minutes. Finally, the computer came up, and it went through a list of four different things. None of those four were what I needed from that particular company. So because I couldn't answer it, they said, they rotated it again. They gave me another choice of the same identical four, and then they hung up on me. So I never got my problem solved. I had to sit and write a letter because there was nobody to talk to.
I love that. If you don't find the answer you're looking for, we'll just hang up on you. That's cool.
And all I ever talked to was the machine. That was it. A computer machine.
Actually, the trick that I found that works quite well, but I'm sure they're on to me by now, is when you get those ugly, press one for, help, press two for unhelp, press three, for something you absolutely
if you have to go to the bathroom.
Don't care about.
Ridiculous things they put on it.
hit zero.
Yep.
And nine times out of ten, Zero goes, oh, you, we're going to have to connect you to a real person.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you go to India, and then you have to wait for an American.
Well, there is a silver lining to this whole thing, folks. At least you're not screaming in the phone, billing, because it couldn't understand you. They've gotten better.
You know, it's funny. For years, Ashley would say to me, why do you get so short with some of these people? Well, as time went on and Ashley got more involved in these internet things and the books, she'd look at me like, now I understand why you have this attitude towards them. And I have a zero tolerance. I give them one or two shots, and they go, enough, get me a supervisor, someone to speak to. And they go, well, I don't think we have a supervisor available. I said, okay, if not, then I'm going to scream at you for 10 minutes. Oh, I'll find a supervisor.
This one day with the computer that Manny doesn't find this funny, but I still do because it was like watching a bad movie. And he had a problem with the computer, and he kept repeating the same thing. And the guy kept saying to him, all right, Mr. Barling, we understand, Mr. Barling. Okay, Mr. Barling, now what is your problem, Mr. Barling? And Mr. Barling would repeat it, and he would say the exact same thing and ask for the same thing. Well, after 15 minutes of him, and he would slow it down, and he would say it loudly, and he would space it between, and the guy kept saying over and over again, okay, Mr. Barling, we understand, Mr. Barling. Now what is your problem, Mr. Barling? I mean, still, that was a really bad movie.
About 8 years ago, I was fixing my landlord's computer. It was an AOL piece of crap. And I call up AOL because there was a software conflict of some sort, and I didn't know what to do with it. And sure as heck, 8 years ago, I got a hold of India. And they started explaining to me what I should do. And what I should do apparently would have destroyed the entire computer. I was listening to them going, what? You want me to corrupt the operating system? Are you sure? No, I just can't believe that.
I don't know computers, but that alone would make me laugh.
I know, Simon. Oh. You're enjoying this, aren't you, Simon?
Oh, hugely. I mean, my favorite response when... of course, I'm slightly older, yeah, and I remember the days of good old DOS. Yeah.
Oh yeah,
and,
Command Prompt.
Yeah, and the ugly versions of Windows. People would call me up with computer problems, and I'd say, okay, it's easily fixed. Just boot into DOS and type format space colon.
Right. Oh, God. Then hit Y.
That's terrible, Simon. You know, I remember those. Of course, I always joke those are the funky days before Microsoft stole Windows from Apple and spent years in litigation and eventually paid damages for it, which is a commentary on Microsoft that they just basically stole everything they could and then went as long as they could and then eventually, you know, paid people off after stealing most of their stuff.
Okay, I have to disagree with you. The original GUI was actually created by Xerox at PARC Park, the Palo Alto Research Center.
Oh, yeah.
And, right, and one day, Mr. Jobs turned up to chat with his friends, and they showed him it. And he went, wow, this is really cool. So he went back to Apple and created the Lisa. Back in those days, they were all friends. So one day, Bill Gates turned up at Jobs' doorstep, and Jobs said, hey, Bill, you got to see this. Really cool. Bill looked at it, and he went, "That is really cool." And he went back to Mike and started Windows. Okay, rent off.
That's interesting. And people don't realize they were once friends. And by the way, that is what broke up their friendship. And it took them years to get back on track. I mean, you're talking about a lot of years the two of them didn't speak at all. It was a, in fact, someone made a very funny, it was a Weapons of something other, it wasn't Mass Distraction, it was the other movie. It was made about their relationship. But, you know, they were in a marketplace where everything was new, and it was every man for himself. And that's sort of how markets grow sometimes. And that's probably okay. But the fact remains that out of all of that, what we created was the type of competition that advanced science but didn't always advance solutions. And that's what happened with Edison and the rest of them. Most people don't realize that Edison claimed to write that he owned every single motion picture made in America until, I think it was about 1911, the Supreme Court broke his hold. But until then, he claimed that if you made a movie, oops, he owned it. Sort of like, you know, seeds from Monsanto. It just is. I mean, Monsanto didn't get this theory from blindly. They're just following the lead of the people who created all these different systems.
Got to understand, take a little step back in time, since we're going old school, which is before I was born, mind you.
I wasn't around for Edison either. Don't worry about it.
I was going to go with Bill Gates. Bill Gates, everyone thinks that, or a lot of people think that he's this great computer guru. No. What he did is he left college, bought QDOS, named it MS-DOS, and marketed. He was really good at marketing. He knew how to sell his product to many people, but he never even designed DOS.
No.
So,
no.
The
only thing Bill had was something called a funky little programming language put on a chip, and he called it BASIC.
Well, really,
I still have a book on BASIC.
The key to him was a little different, though. Bill Gates' father is an outstanding lawyer. I actually did a deal with him a long, long time ago before Gates became famous. So when it came time to do something with these various businesses, Gates had the ability, because his father was a very successful lawyer, to do a lot of things that his peer group couldn't do, and it gave him an advantage. And also the fact that most lawyers' sons, including my own son, tend to work in law offices for long periods of time, and they just come away with some advantages that other people don't have. And those advantages helped him immensely early in his career. But no, he's never been I don't think he's ever claimed to be the great guru either, has he? I mean,
No, it's just a common misconception that people think that he created DOS, he created Windows. He's just sitting back and soaking up ideas.
Yeah, and the same could be said for Edison, by the way. Edison had a lab in New Jersey filled with, 20, 30 of the brightest minds from the major universities. Well, they're the ones who did the work.
Oh, absolutely.
And that could probably be said of everybody. I recall early in my career winning a major lawsuit against the NFL, but the lawyer I worked for is the one who got in front of the press and took all the credit. The problem was he didn't do any of the work and didn't know what he was talking about, and he was lucky nobody noticed.
There's some sort of horrible echo happening.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Might be me. Let me check.
It's all your fault.
Still doing it?
Yeah.
So maybe it's time for us to call us quit. And by the way, Lunchbox, I got some sad news. You're not going to be able to talk to us till early January. Our new book is out. Ash and I are going on a media tour. We're buried with a lot of other things, and we just don't have the time or the ability to do the show again until the early part of the year, and we hope everybody will understand and forgive us for having to work and do other things,
right.
And travel and you know, whatever. And it's just hard to even consider doing the show in motel rooms between all of that, as well as a variety of other commitments we have. So we're probably not going to be back on until early January, and we thank everybody for watching us. We thank everybody for listening, and we promise we'll give you plenty of notice on Blogger News when we're coming back, so you can lock up the women and children and make it safe again.
Well, congratulations on your book.
Well, thank you very much. And a comment for everybody who's dying to do this, I actually found it easier to practice law than to write all these books with Ashley. And at times, Ash and I look at each other and go, this is really hard. So anyone who's dying to jump out there and write a book, roll up your sleeves, because we found this one of the toughest things we've ever done.
The marketing. It's very tough with the marketing.
But even
the
perfection it's required.
Yes.
So,
the
anyway,
detailing.
Lunchbox, you and everyone else that have been on the show, we appreciate you, we thank you, and we promise to be back for you.
Wonderful. Look forward to it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it. Oh, I already got January's a long way off. I already missed the listeners. Thank you all for listening.
Simon, do you have any final comments for us?
It's been an absolute delight. Now, I can't say that. It's been a horrifying journey with the pair of you.
Well, I guess you can go back to eating fast food and work on your blood, thickening and cholesterol. And so maybe when we go back on the show, we want to know if you've gained any weight back on that food and whether you're still with us and whether you're ready to fall over and die from fast foods. Okay?
And he is joking.
But I don't eat fast foods. I'm 148 pounds dripping wet. Have been for decades.
Half of America now hates you. You were very
popular.
He
forgot to tell you he was 4 feet
tall. He's half of me.
Sorry.
Simon, is it true you're 4 feet tall? And that's
you're
why
4 feet tall and you weigh 148 pounds, but you look great.
He's an Oompa Loompa.
Look, I would like to point out that I am 5'7" and, well, maybe 5'8".
No fudging now.
He's trying to squeeze an inch on us.
Right.
Yeah.
He forgot to lay on the stretch machine last night.
Well, I have to ask, is that with your shoes on? Were you dressed? I mean, these are important things to know.
Platforms.
Right, he had Jan's shoes on.
Oh, wow. Somehow or another, I don't want to leave our viewers.
I used to have some, 4-inch platform shoes. Well, that takes me back to the 70s.
Oh, I tried those too. My ankles didn't survive the 70s well with those.
Okay, I guess it's time to wrap this program up. Manny and Ashley, I really want to thank you for taking part. And we'll be back sometime. Till that sometime, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe life. Till next time, goodbye.